This information is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject matter covered. It is offered with the understanding that the presenters are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If legal advice or other expert advice is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.
Welcome to the Los Angeles Real Estate Investing and Real Estate Financial Planning Podcast. Learn all about investing in real estate in Los Angeles, California, with a combination of real estate financial planning and modeling with numbers specific to Los Angeles, plus syndicated, more generalized recordings of live and pre-recorded real estate investing classes, not all of them specific to Los Angeles. Be sure to stay tuned after the podcast for a message from our sponsors.
Well, good morning and welcome, everyone. I am your host, James Orr, and this is another class on deal analysis. You know, there are some real estate investors who are really focused in on the fact that they can only get 10, 30-year fixed-rate financing loans when buying investment properties. So they become really concerned about maximizing their loans. Now, not everyone's going to go buy 10 rental properties, but the people that really know that they're going to buy more than 10, they get really obsessed about this idea that, hey, I can only get 10 30-year fixed-rate financing loans, and so I want to maximize the size of the loans that I'm going to get. And so a lot of folks interpret that or go jump to the next logical conclusion that I should go buy properties that are really, really expensive to use these loan spots so that I can get massive net worth. Once those properties are paid off, I'll have a much larger net worth than if I bought smaller properties and utilized my 10, 30-year fixed-rate financing loans with that. And that leads them to believe that they should be buying these really expensive properties. And then they start analyzing, you know, expensive single-family homes. And unless you're doing strategies like, you know, short-term rentals or something like that, where you can buy these really expensive houses and make them cash flow, most of the time, in most markets, buying these expensive properties are really hard to make the numbers work when you're buying them. So then people jump to, I'm going to buy duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes because those are still considered non-commercial type loans where you get into a totally different type of financing and that those can count toward their 30-year fixed rate financing loans. So today for deal analysis, we are going to look at analyzing a duplex and see how that varies a little bit from buying just a regular single family home. And so I'll just do this as duplex example for the name of the property. I downloaded the world's greatest real estate deal analysis spreadsheet and just pulled it up. And we're just going to walk through the analysis together and how to do this. So duplexes, you know, they're going to be in that they're a little bit more expensive. So we're going to buy a $700,000 duplex and we're going to pay full price for it. You know, in some markets, you'll be able to buy these at a slight discount. In some markets where they're really competitive, you may have to be competitive and bid up a property in order to get the purchase on it. But in this case, we're going to assume that you're going to buy it for full price. $700,000 is what we're going to assume for the purchase price. In some markets, this is going to seem high. In some markets, they're going to be like, yeah, it's $700,000 for single family homes. Duplexes are definitely much higher than that. And so you'll really want to go and talk to your local real estate agent and do that. Or I'm going to put up deal analysis for each of the markets. And eventually I'll get to the point where I add duplexes and triplexes and fourplexes. Right now, it's only going to be single family homes until I get around to that. You're not, in this particular example, we were not able to negotiate seller concessions. And so we put zero in there for seller concessions. Seller concessions are when a seller agrees to contribute money towards your closing costs. In this particular case, you were not able to negotiate that with the seller. And so we're going to use zero for that. Now for down payments, for duplexes, it's interesting. Most of the time, you're going to have to put 25% down if you're buying a non-owner occupant duplex, where you're buying a duplex and you're not planning on moving into either side. However, one of the nice things about being able to do like a house hacking strategy where you move into one part of the property and you rent out the other like a duplex, triplex, or fourplex, or if you're going to do the nomad strategy where you're buying property sequentially, moving in, living there for at least a year, and then converting them to rentals as you move out and buy the next property, you know, you could do those where you can get, you know, a 3.5% down loan for FHA for buying a single family home or a duplex or a triplex or a fourplex. Or you could also do nothing down VA loans if you have VA benefits. If you served in the military and you got VA benefits, you can use a nothing down VA loan in order to do that. But we're going to assume today that you're able to that you're not going to move into the property. You're not going to house hack. You're not going to do the nomad strategy. And so you're going to buy a duplex and you're going to put 25% down in order to buy the duplex. We're going to assume the closing costs are about 1%. You'd call up your lender and you'd get the actual closing costs. You'd put those in there. And then rent ready costs. This is the money that you need to put into the property in order to get it ready to rent. I will tell you that every property that I've ever seen, even brand new construction properties, have some rent ready cost. There may have been that one property that was in like completely perfect condition that had nothing show up that you had to fix on an inspection report. But the overwhelming majority of the time, 99.9% of the time, you're going to need some money set aside to do something for a property, you know, something that came up on your inspection report that you were not able to negotiate, or, you know, you're going to need to do some, you know, tiny fix up repairs or something like that to the property to get it ready to rent, you know, even changing locks and stuff like that. There's some money that you need in order to get a property ready to rent it out. And so for duplexes, because there's two units, it's going to be a little bit more expensive. We'll call that about $7,000 for that to get both sides ready to do it. And then we're going to jump down here and we're going to do the mortgage interest rate because this is an investment property. It's going to be about 7.25. We're doing a 30-year loan on this particular property. There's not going to be any PMI because we put more than 20% down. Had you put, you know, 3.5% down and bought this FHA, we'd have higher closing costs because there's going to be closing costs and upfront fee in order to do the PMI upfront mortgage insurance premium for FHA loans. And then in addition to that, if you did an FHA loan, there would also be this monthly private mortgage insurance fee. And that would usually go away around it would never go away for FHA. So we put zero in there for that. So that's what you'd do if you'd add a less than 20% down payment. In this case, we put more than 20% down. So PMI could be zero. Just leave it there. Now for monthly rent. So we're in this particular property, we're assuming you can get about $2,600 per side for your duplex. And so you can do this when you have multi-unit properties, you can actually use a formula to show how, you know, the rents on each individual property. So in this case, let's say that, you know, one side was a little bit nicer than the other and you got $2,650 for that one. And then you got a little bit less for the other side, $2,550. And so then it adds up. You put equals and then put the two different numbers in there to sum up the total for rent. Or, you know, if you had a fourplex, you could just keep adding more here. If you had a triplex, you could add another one there. If you had a fourplex, you could add another one there. So you could do all those if you wanted to add them. Or another way to do this, you just put in the regular number if you wanted to. Or you could say, you know, this is 2,600 times two. So either way you want to do it, I actually just decided to do the addition, and that's what we'll do there. And then if you have any other income coming in from the property, you could put that here. If you had laundry on site or anything like that, you could put that as an additional source of income on the property. Vacancy rate, I will tell you that even though we start, you know, 60 to 90 days early, and even though we, you know, test the rent out really high, and we drop the rent a little bit as we're trying to find tenants and properties, I will also point out to you that for some reason, once you move from a single family detached property to even condos and townhomes, and then even more so with duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes, just for whatever reason, the vacancy tends to be the tiniest bit higher as you go away from this single family detached property, just in general, over a very large data set. That's been my experience. You may have a different experience in your local marketplace and with your ability to manage properties, but my experience is that the vacancy tends to be the tiniest bit higher. I'm going to leave it at 3% because you can solve some of this by adjusting the rent, although you tend to have people stay a lower amount of time in duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes than they would in a detached single-family home. And so your maintenance tends to be a little bit higher because you tend to have more turnover. And with more turnover, you tend to have more times that you need to fix little things in the properties and replace carpet and stuff like that. Imagine for a minute, I'll explain it this way. Imagine for a minute you had a single family home and you got a really good, very long-term tenant in there where they stayed in the property for 15 years. Well, the amount of times you need to change out the carpet in that property over one tenant living there for 15 years is very different than if you have, you know, five tenants live there for 3 years each. You're probably going to have at least one additional flooring replacement during that period of time just based on that. And so for reasons like that, your maintenance on your property and maybe even like your vacancy on your property is going to be bumped up the tiniest bit when you're analyzing these sort of like multifamily properties versus a single family home. So I'm going to use 3% for vacancy. Property taxes, we're still estimating at 0.56% of the property value. Insurance is going to be higher. It's going to be about $2,800 a month for doing that. There's no HOA on this particular one. Now, utilities. So most of the time, a lot of the times when we're analyzing a like single family home, attached or detached, you know, condo or townhome, you know, any type of those types of things where it's not a multifamily property, the chance of you as the landlord needing to pay some of the utilities is relatively low. Yeah, there are definitely exceptions to this, where in some markets you're expected to pay for, you know, one of the utilities or more of the utilities. However, the majority of the time, a tenant moving into a detached single family home is going to be paying all the utilities for the property. In a lot of markets, they're going to switch it to their name. And so they're going to be responsible for it. In a lot of cases, you'll have like a landlord policy with the utility company where if the tenant actually stops paying or the tenant says they moved out, then it automatically reverts back to you. You can call up your utility companies and a lot of them will offer that as a service to you. But when you start dealing with duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes, increase the chance that you have some type of common area where you will be required to pay the utilities. For example, sometimes in duplexes, the duplexes are set up where there's a shared common front door, and then you walk into like a little entryway, and then off of the entryway are the doors to the units. And because that centralized unit has its own electricity, you need to heat it and air condition it, or at least lighting for it and electrical outlets for it. In a lot of those cases, the landlord will have a third electric meter on the property where they will be responsible for the electric for that thing, you know, for that little part of the unit, or, you know, some type of outdoor lighting or some other thing like that where you have some responsibility for some of the utilities. Or if you're like maintaining the outdoor lawn, you know, when you have a single family home, in most cases, the tenant is going to be responsible for lawn care. When you start moving to duplexes, maybe not as much, but triplexes maybe more likely, and probably even more likely with fourplexes, you will get to the point where you can't expect, you know, the tenants to take care of their own 1/4 of the lawn, unless the units happen to be kind of like broken out where you're buying like four townhomes in a row where they each have their own like front yard and backyard, and it's really clear that that is the case. But a lot of times you're going to have these fourplexes that look like, you know, like mini buildings where the lawn is not set up so that each individual unit has their own yard. And so in those cases, you will likely have, you know, some type of lawn care utilities expense and lawn care expense, and also like the water for watering the lawn or whatever else, or even snow removal for shoveling the walks and things of that nature. So you will usually have some type of additional expenses in here. In this particular example, I'm going to assume that the duplex is really separate, where they have two separate units and you have like a fence dividing the front yard for unit one, a fence dividing the front yard for unit two, and as same thing with the backyard, so that the utilities are completely split. There's no shared utility. There's no utilities that the landlord is responsible for paying, and they have their own yard care. That is not usually the case, especially as you increase the number of units. So be aware that you'll want to put those expenses in here. Like if you had a lawn care expense, you know, whatever it is, you could put that in here. If you had snow removal expense or whatever it is you've gotten there, go ahead and average those up for the year, divide them out so that you know what the average is for each month. So make sure you look at the summer expenses and the winter expenses and the fall and the spring expenses. Make sure you add all those up together and then divide by 12 to find out what they're going to be for each month to do that. Okay. So as I explained, there's not going to be any extra utilities landlords responsible for paying. The tenants are going to be able to pay them in this case, and that they're able to maintain their own lawns to do that. That is not always the case. And as I mentioned before, a lot of times you will see an increase in the maintenance number for buying a, you know, duplex, triplex, or fourplex because you have a slightly higher, slightly increased chance that your tenants are going to be moving out more frequently. And so you'll see that maintenance number kind of creep up a little bit more than you will with a single family home. Same thing with CapEx. The other thing I'll add about maintenance on, you know, duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes versus single family homes is, for whatever reason, tenants tend to treat those just the tiniest bit rougher on average than they do a single family home. I can't explain to you why exactly that is, but that is my experience. And so you will tend to see a slight increase in maintenance as well on those for that reason. In this case, I'm going to assume you're managing it yourself. Although if you were going to hire a property manager, you know, you'd see actually a negative cash flow here. It's positive when we take into account the depreciation, but because we're actually going to manage it ourselves, we're going to see this be slightly positive when we do that. Land value, we're assuming that 15% of the purchase price, the $700,000 of the purchase price, is the value of the land, and that this is also a residential property. This is not a commercial property. You know, when people are living in the property, they're residential. So we're depreciating, our depreciation period is 27 and a half years. And we're assuming the effective income tax rate for the landlord, the person owning this, is 20%. And we use that to calculate the cash flow from depreciation. So just looking at a couple of the kind of like metrics for analysis here, this does now have positive cash flow. I'll make a comment about this. In some markets, people believe that by buying a duplex, triplex, or fourplex, they would actually increase their cash flow. And I do think sometimes that's true, but it is definitely not universally true. There are times when you could pick a optimal single family home that has a better price to rent ratio, a better kind of like income to expense ratio is probably a better way of saying it, where you have more income coming in on the property and your expenses are lower, where your cash flow is better by buying this optimal single family home versus buying a duplex, triplex, or fourplex, where for whatever reason, they're in demand, prices are up on them, and the income you can get on them is not quite as much. And the expenses sometimes are even a little bit bumped up because there's these, you know, shared lawn care and snow removal and the slightly higher maintenance on the property. And maybe you're paying a little bit of utilities, and like all of those things can come into play where the economics of buying a duplex, triplex, fourplex may not quite be as good as buying the ideal single family home. And there's exceptions to all this, right? Like there are some markets where, yes, buying a duplex is much better economically. And there's some markets where buying a single family home is much better than buying any type of, you know, duplex, triplex, or fourplex. So you got to do your own market research and analyze deals to make sure. Don't automatically assume that one is going to be better or worse when you do this. Okay. So that being said, cash flow, about $398 a month. The cash flow from depreciation, the tax benefits from owning the property is $361. Combine those together at $759. You can see all those numbers either in the chart or all right here. And then the total amount of return you're getting in dollars, you're getting about $21,000 per year in appreciation. You're getting about $4,778 per year in cash flow, about $5,081 in the first year in paying down the loan, and about $4,327 from that cash flow from depreciation or the tax benefits. You add all those up and you get about $35,187 by buying this particular duplex. If you take into account 6 months of reserves kept someplace really secure and safe, like a savings account or something like that, you're expected to get $35,744 for your, including that 6 months of reserve return. And then if you keep 12 months of reserves, but you keep it in something a little bit more aggressive, like the stock market, then you're going to get $39,647 from all of your areas of return. The appreciation, the cash flow, the debt pay down, the cash flow from depreciation, all four of those returns remain the same. The differences between these are just the return you're earning on the reserves you set aside. Because it would be imprudent for you to buy a rental property and to not set aside reserves, we now need to take into account those reserves, both in, we're going to have these 6 months of reserves, let's set it somewhere, a savings account or the stock market, and now we're earning a little bit of money on that. So we need to count that as part of the income we get by buying this rental property. Because we need the reserves in order to buy the rental property, we can count the return we're earning on those reserves toward the return we're getting by owning this rental property, because you need the reserves in order to do it. But we also then need to take into account that the reserves are part of the amount we needed to invest in order to buy this property. So that becomes part of our denominator when we calculate our return on investment. And so we're looking at return on investment. This is the one where we don't take into account reserves. It's 18.62% is the amount we're earning when we ignore reserves. Now, these are the more realistic ones where we do take into account reserves. This is the one where we take into account 6 months of reserves, 16.48% in the first year return on investment. And then your return on investment when you have 12 months of reserves is 16.2%. Okay, so this shows you your return on investment for year one. This one without reserves, this is what you use to lie at a cocktail party. When you go tell everyone else how well you're doing on your rental property, this is the number you typically use, because you're not really going into the whole reserves things with most people. And so this is the 16.48. This is the real number that you are actually earning if you take into account your reserves, both the income you're earning on that reserve and also that has now has been included in the denominator as part of the investment part of return on investment when we do that calculation. Okay, so you can look at that. You can see the overall return. This particular one, the cash on cash return on investment, 2.53 in year one, 3.29 in year two estimated, 4.07 in year three, 4.87 in year four, and then 5.7 in year five. Just improvement to cash flow over time. That's your cash on cash return on investment numbers. And then these are the cap rate numbers. You know, it's a 6.82 cap property when you're buying it. All right. So that's it. You can go drill down into more of the charts and see the analysis, but I wanted to run through a little bit of what is different when we buy a duplex. Maybe I'll even do a separate one. We do a triplex or fourplex just to kind of give you some ideas of like how that works. But the idea is that as you move away from these single family homes, there are things that change when we do deal analysis.
With home prices up, mortgage interest rates up and rents up, but not quite enough to counteract the higher prices and interest rates, cash flow on rental properties is harder than ever. Book a call with the Real Estate Financial Planner to apply our proprietary 88 strategies to improve cash flow on your rentals. See the show notes for a link to schedule your call and improve your cash flow today.
If you're a real estate agent, lender, or professional in Los Angeles that wants to help our real estate investor listeners, consider reaching out to learn about collaboration opportunities with this podcast. We'd love to add more value to our listeners by having you assist our investors buy, sell, and finance their real estate investments. See the show notes to schedule a call to discuss collaboration opportunities.